Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to those who believe a car should stir one's emotions and deliver a heightened state of driving. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. The coronavirus is having a worldwide impact, changing the way we live and threatening to destroy what was, until last week, a roaring economy, and taking the longest bull market in history and sending it careening into bear territory. Yesterday, Wall Street wasted no time in picking up where it left off last Friday.
There is the opening bell.
In the equity market, we open up with the S&P 500 down around about 8%.
That's your first circuit breaker. And at 2490, Jim, it'll be halted at the open.
Sounds like a race play-by-play. Trading was halted for 15 minutes at the open. After the S&P 500 dropped 7%, the S&P would be down 10.5% by the end of the day. The Dow fell nearly 3,000 points, or 12.93%, the worst day since 1987. The NASDAQ was 10.4% lower. While the stock market was mercifully nearing the closing bell yesterday, President Trump was asked to give his forecast of the economic landscape.
Is the U.S. economy heading into a recession?
Well, it may be. We're not thinking in terms of recession. We're thinking in terms of the virus. Once we stop, I think there's a tremendous pent-up demand, both in terms of the stock market and in terms of the economy. And once this goes away, once it goes through and we're done with it, I think you're going to see a tremendous surge.
As governments around the country are curtailing business in order to achieve social distance to flatten the curve of COVID-19 cases, businesses are in survival mode. And if you're invested, if you have a 401k in anything but a passbook savings account, you may be feeling pretty vulnerable right now. The market hates uncertainty, and the uncharted territory we find ourselves in around the globe is unprecedented. So how long might this last? What will happen if this drags on, as the president said, until August or so? What should you do? For answers, we turn to Mark Vittner. He's a senior economist at Wells Fargo. Welcome back, Mark.
Good to be back.
Michelle Singletary is a personal finance columnist for The Washington Post. She joins us from D.C. Thank you for being here.
You're welcome.
And Tony Mesilla follows Charlotte Business at the Charlotte Ledger, where he is editor. He also appears on our BizWorthy segment every Thursday on WFAE's Morning Edition. Welcome back.
Good morning, Mike.
If you'd like to join our conversation, you can email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org. Search for WFAE on Facebook. Get to us through Twitter at Charlotte Talks. Was the president right? Is there going to be a lot of pent-up demand, Mark, when all this goes away, and it will go away someday? Will there be pent-up demand to take us back to the heights we've previously known?
Well, there certainly will be pent-up demand, because we're going to have a lot of folks that are going to be spending a lot of time at home and not going out and consuming and doing all the things that they would have been doing. So I do think we'll see a bounce back from that. You know, more fundamentally, the thing that gives me the most comfort medium to long term about the economy is that we didn't have any serious excesses in the economy prior to this. We didn't overbuild housing. We didn't overbuild commercial construction. Businesses didn't overinvest. Consumers' household balance sheets were in really relatively good shape.
So, is that what Larry Kudlow means when he says the economic fundamentals are sound?
Yes, it means that the fundamentals are sound, the building blocks of economic growth are sound, but when you get an exogenous shock like this, there's nothing that you can do, because there's nothing that you can do to avert the downturn, because everything we do in life involves a risk-adjusted rate of return calculation. And so you weigh the risk on every economic decision you make, every consumption decision you make. I always use the analogy that your decision to eat steak or chicken is in part based on your last doctor's visit and what your cholesterol reading
does was. The White House has gotten a lot of criticism for being slow in responding to this, despite the warning signs from other countries coming our way. Does business, we've never seen anything like this before. Does business plan for things like this? Is this built into anything anywhere?
Well, I would say that in large companies, there are wargaming scenarios and stress tests and things that look at things of this magnitude. It wouldn't be the precise this precise case, but it'd be something similar to it. Businesses actually have been able to respond. Large companies have been able to respond to this very quickly.
I was going to point out how fragile the economy looks given what's happening, but that would be wrong because we've never seen anything like this before. And if you don't spend, then nobody's buying. And your spending money is their income. And the whole machine just grinds to a halt.
And that's where I believe that, it's something that I've stressed with you and shows previously, there's an enormous misconception of consumer spending in the United States. Consumer spending accounts for roughly two-thirds of GDP. It's really closer to 70%. And what that means is consumers purchase 70% of the goods produced in the United States or around the world. You get to net out the trade deficit. But within that 70%, two-thirds is on autopilot. It will not stop at all during this because it's the consumption of housing. It's your insurance. It's your cable. It's your utilities. It's health care.
Well, it is if you are not an hourly worker who doesn't have to, who must, if you don't have to show up for work and they're still going to pay you, yeah, you'll pay your mortgage. You'll pay your utility
bills. Doesn't even matter if you pay your mortgage or pay your utility bills. If you're consuming those things, that is what's measured. Not whether you're paying it or not. We do measure it at the point of it's not the paying of a mortgage, it's the consuming of a roof over your head. It's the consumption. So whether you pay for it or not, even if you've already paid for the house, you're still consuming it. And that is 40% of consumer spending. Okay. And so when you see some of these really sharp, people are saying, oh, we're going to be down 10%. And maybe 10% in the second quarter. I don't know. There's really roughly 6% of the economy that is going to see somewhere between a 70% and a 90% pullback.
So you're not as panicked as the investors on Wall Street are? Is that what you're telling us?
I'm not as panicked as some investors on Wall Street. And I don't want that to come across as that I'm nonchalant. I'm extremely concerned. This is probably the toughest environment that we faced. I think that it's very different from 9/11. It's very different from the financial crisis, but it is much more pervasive. I'm a little miffed at some of the misconceptions. I mean, there's been all this talk, are we going to be like Korea? Are we going to be like Italy? That's the nuttiest thing I've ever heard in my life. We're nothing like Italy. We're nothing like Korea. We're a much larger country.
I think those conversations are about the medical aspect of this, but not about the economic aspect of this.
But it gets back to the economics of it, and that we are a freer society. And I think that some of the concern that the federal government has been slow is that the federal government doesn't have the same powers in the United States that the federal government does in other countries. Right. They can't order businesses to shut down. They can suggest. They can order the governors to do that because the governors actually have more power over the businesses than the federal government does.
So yesterday was the third historically negative day in the last 6 days of trading. And Michelle, the Washington Post, your colleague there, columnist Brian Kloss, tweeted this yesterday. He said the Dow fell 12.94% today. The worst day in 1929 was a decline of 12.92%. It was the second largest percentage decline of the Dow in American history. You're the personal investment advice columnist. Advise me.
Well, I mean, those are important numbers, but most people couldn't even tell you what the Dow is. Let's keep that in perspective. That's the 30 largest companies. So it doesn't represent all the companies that are in the stock market. And while we need to be concerned about what is going on for the average person, who's mostly people are investing through their retirement fund and then some through a college fund, a 529 plan. So we're talking about retirement money, which is long-term money. And many people at this point have, 10, 20, maybe 30 years to retirement. So while you're going to be concerned about that number, you shouldn't. I was going to say don't panic because the fact of the matter is we're panicking, and it's a natural emotion. But don't panic sell. Don't give in to those fears. You feel what you need to feel because this is a scary time. But just remember that historically the market does rebound. I mean,
let me ask you this question because every financial person I have ever spoken to, ever, when we hit rough patches, they all say, don't sell. Stay the course. Don't get it now. You cannot time the bottom. And you cannot time when it's going to come back. So you just stay involved. But the reason the market is falling is because professionals, big money people, are getting the heck out. So if they're smart enough to do that, why shouldn't we be following suit, Michelle?
Well, because they're not smart. I mean, look at... when you look at studies about how the professionals trade and invest, it's not much better than the regular person sitting in their home right now. And they've got bigger numbers, so their losses are bigger numbers, and they've got to account to that to the people who hold their funds in general. So they want to say, oh, well, we got out when it was only 12 and then it went to 20. So their agenda is not your agenda. It's like what your mom said. If Johnny jumps off the mountain, are you going to jump too? So you have to remember what your mama said. Don't follow what other people are doing.
The other important point there is that, you know, we've seen this tremendous run-up, and yes, is the market down 30% in a month? Yes. But it's back to where it was in 2017. If you had sold during the financial crisis, you would have missed out on all those gains for years. And so I think it's a good point that Michelle makes. I mean, you can't really... It is hard to time, and you shouldn't try to time it. And if you've been doing things that financial advisors have been telling you, which is as you approach retirement, put it in a little bit safer, have an emergency fund, do these kinds of things, you should be able to ride this out okay. It's the people who don't do those kind of things that I think are now kind of stuck.
And we do have to remember that just 2 weeks ago, we were at all-time financial highs on the stock market.
It seems like it was such a long time ago.
I know,
ago.
But it was so we have a little cushion there, as you pointed out, because we were so high, we haven't even fallen anywhere near the 2008 situation.
When things like this happen, I think we need to take, everyone is, hopefully staying in place, so there's time to reflect. And so rather than concentrating on what's just happened in the stock market, because that's just one part of your financial life. And what I've been trying to tell people for years and years is if I lose, and I'm telling you this honestly because I've got my money in retirement, if I lose every single dollar in my retirement account, I'm going to still be okay. Why is that? Because I'm on track to pay off my mortgage before I retire. We have no consumer debt other than our mortgage. We save to send all three of our children to college debt-free. You know, we consume what we don't overconsume. We have savings to get us through this crisis. So if you do all those things, if nothing else, use this time to look at how you're spending your everyday money, because that is what's that is the key right now. Do you have enough to go to the grocery store if you don't get a paycheck for a couple of weeks? That's what we need to be looking at, and hopefully people will learn from this crisis that emergency fund is so key. It's actually more important than what you have in your retirement account right now.
So, Tony, all these big banks can weather this storm for a while, but we have a lot, tons more small businesses around the Charlotte area. Bars and restaurants must be really suffering right now, or they soon will be if they haven't already started that. What are you hearing from those businesses?
Yeah, and retail?
Sure,
yeah. I spent the last couple of days talking to a lot of these businesses in Charlotte, and we've written some of it in the Charlotte Ledger. And a lot of them are, they're very concerned. I mean, it's like your personal finances. A lot of it's the same. They don't know what's coming. There's a lot of uncertainty. You know, up until last week, a lot of these retailers, the bars and the restaurants, business was great. They had revenue coming in. You probably might have seen the photos from South End this weekend. People packed in, celebrating St. Patrick's Day, that kind of thing. And so they're, I think they're very concerned, and we'll follow up on that.
Yeah, but yes, we'll come back to that in a second. I'm sorry, we're coming up to a break. Tony Masiga is with us from the Charlotte Agenda, the Charlotte Ledger, excuse me. We're coming right back at Charlotte Talks. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to Mazda's focus to ensure every element of a car is designed around the driver. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the economic impact of the coronavirus outbreak on your personal economies, your 401ks, your investments, your college funds, and, of course, on business around town. Mark Vittner is a senior economist at Wells Fargo. Michelle Singletary writes a personal finance column for The Washington Post. She joins us from D.C. Tony Masiga is here. He's the editor of the Charlotte Ledger. And just prior to the break, Tony, we were talking about local local business and how they were weathering this storm and what the impact you're hearing about has been. This is actually just beginning for us. This is not like New Rochelle, and this is not like some place like San Francisco yet. Mm-hmm. It may become that. And I know that the first retail shutdowns that I was aware of was the announcement from Apple and Nike that they were closing all of their stores nationwide. And that's something that they're big companies. They can afford to weather this. I got an email yesterday from Microsoft. They're shuttering all of their stores for the time being. But what about these ma and pa retailers? What about places like Michael's? What about Macy's, for that matter, at South Park? At some point, people are not going to want to go there because they're going to be too afraid to go there.
Yeah, I mean, I think the impact on small businesses is certainly going to be pretty severe, where you have a lot of these retailers that have been investing in growth, and so they don't, you take away their revenue for a couple of months almost entirely, and that's going to be, I think, a big problem. But I would say even the big retailers, we've seen this move in the last few years. Some of these big retailers are having a lot of problems too, as far as transitioning to, this online economy and trying to figure out, there have been a lot of questions. What are the future of shopping malls? Because people are ordering more things online. So I think what you're going to see is really an acceleration of some of the trends that we've already seen, which is more toward more online shopping, toward more home delivery of goods, groceries, food, working from home. I mean, these are all big trends, and I think they're really going to be turbocharged.
I was going to ask you about that, because it seems to me that we can order anything on Amazon. We don't have to meet the delivery guy. He can put it on the front stoop and walk away. We can sanitize the package and bring it in. So is that going to How rapidly is that going to accelerate?
Very rapidly. Amazon said yesterday they're hiring 100,000 people nationally to help meet the demand that they anticipate.
So, will we want to return to what we had before, or will this accelerate beyond anybody's anticipation our shift to online away from brick-and-mortar retail?
I think that's a very good question. I think you're seeing a lot of people now are going to get a lot more familiar with this. You might have people, who are our age, Mike, or older, that have never ordered Grubhub or DoorDash or have had their groceries delivered that are now going to be navigating these kinds of things. And so I think you're going to definitely see an acceleration of that, certainly in the short term. And I don't know if it ever goes back to the way that it was. I mean, these are long-term trends, and they're going to be taking place very rapidly now.
The numbers, because they're trying to flatten the so-called coronavirus curve, because if we don't take preventive measures now, the hospital systems will not be able to handle the influx of patients. So they're putting in these what may seem to us now overly cautious, draconian measures, which in fact, in hindsight, we are told, will not look that way. But that's impacting business. It's impacting restaurants. We can't gather in groups larger than, I think, 10 in Charlotte anymore. So that means you really can't go to a restaurant. You can't. The movie theaters can't operate, et cetera. And this was supposed to be for what? 6 weeks, 8 weeks? President said yesterday, maybe August. Can business weather this storm until August?
Yeah, I don't know what the timetable is. And so I think that the president seems to have done a 180 from emphasizing the best case to emphasizing the worst case.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't
you think it'd be better to be pleasantly surprised?
Yes, I
want
do.
Want to talk down the economy, really.
I do, but I what we're telling folks is that it all really, the economic outcomes depend a lot on how the virus behaves. Does it begin to weaken and slow as the weather warms up and humidity increases?
Mm-hmm.
And but I am afraid that this is going to be with us for quite some time, because I don't think that the draconian measures will be, but I'm very concerned that this impacts the entire world, and the United States is probably going to be less impacted than virtually all other major industrialized economies.
Why?
Because our economy is more insular. We 90% of our GDP is determined by what goes on within our own borders.
Mm.
And most other economies are very tied to the global economy and emerging economies, which are doing absolutely nothing.
I know it's hard to say because we're in uncharted territory, but how long do you think, if we're in this till August, how long will it take for an economy, the world economy, the U.S. economy, the Charlotte economy, my personal economy, to recover?
Well, typically, and sort of the base case, which there's a, you should look at things as a range of outcomes, but the base case, I think what most economists are now agreeing on is that we're probably looking at a recession that'll last from 7 to 9 months. The average recession is 9 months, so it's, they're looking at a less than average recession.
Are we in it now?
But one that's deeper. It probably started in March and will probably last through the second and third quarters or end in the third quarter.
So,
and that may have been what the president was referring to because, you know, if we're talking about the third quarter, that's July and August. I wasn't sure if he was referring to the virus, the economy. It's, you know, those press conferences are kind of a mess.
Yeah. So this morning in the Post, Michelle, your colleagues Erica Werner and Jeff Stein wrote that the Trump administration is asking Congress to approve a massive economic stimulus package of around $850 billion to staunch this economic freefall, and the package would be mostly devoted to flooding the economy with cash through a payroll tax cut or other mechanism. The payroll tax cut is what we pay into and what businesses pay into Social Security. Is that correct?
That's right. We pay, consumers pay part of it, well, workers pay part of it, and then companies pay part of it, and that money is then used to fund Social Security.
So Social Security is already allegedly broke and certainly underfunded. Why take this course? I'm not sure who to ask this question of. Maybe you, Michelle, but why take this course? If you want to flood the economy with money, why take it from the money we put into Social Security? Just eliminate our income tax for the next 3 months.
Wow.
Don't pay any tax.
Yeah, that's not going to go over well with anybody because the income tax clearly, you know, pays for all the things, you know, police, schools, and all the services that we're going to still need. So the idea is that if you eliminate the payroll tax, at least for companies and workers, that's going to have more money in their pockets, and they'll be able to use that money to pay their rent and buy food and things like that. But it is short-sighted. Social Security isn't broke, but it is broken, meaning that at a certain point, I think it's 2034 or so, it's not going to be taking in enough money to pay everybody who is on Social Security or get benefits from that entitlement program. So that about 70% will be a short. And so if you remove some of that money now, it's just going to make that problem even worse. And the problem is Congress, nor the president, Trump or before him, have dealt with this. And so that's going to make and we know that Social Security keeps millions of seniors out of poverty. So I would not like them to see them take that money
Let me answer a couple of questions there on Social Security. For one thing, any change to the payroll tax would have absolutely no effect on benefits paid. I mean, I think the whole idea is here is that this is a temporary. They're looking at what they're proposing is a temporary cessation of employment taxes, so the Social Security taxes on workers and the businesses. And the idea is that, and it would be prorated back to the start of the year, so workers that were not working would actually get a refund check. And the idea is to put some money into people's pockets. Now, Social Security is going to have to be fixed. We're going to have to look at a long-term fix. And the time to do that is not in the midst of this crisis. It's probably sometime down the road.
Why do that? Why not just either lower income taxes or say for the next 2 months, we will not deduct income taxes and you will not owe that money?
Well, they're looking at ways to help wage earners. And so the income taxes you may not provide as much relief to wage earners. And also it helps the employers. So it helps them keep more people on their payrolls.
In New York City, they've closed all the restaurants and they've closed all the bars. I don't know that that's coming here, but people would be wise not to spend a lot of time in crowded restaurants and crowded bars. And so a lot of restaurants are sending out emails saying, takeout, you can come and get takeout. We'll even deliver for free, not through Grubhub. We will do the delivery for free. I even got an Open Table email yesterday from that little app on my phone saying that please support the restaurants while this coronavirus thing is going on. And remember, takeout works. That helps them stay in business. Doesn't help the waiters and the waitresses, but it helps the business stay in business. Can restaurants in Charlotte survive on takeout only. What about these breweries and bars who are closing their tap rooms?
I think they're trying to make it better. They're not. I don't think it solves the problem, but if you're one of these businesses, you're looking for creative solutions like that, and you're right. You're seeing a lot having to switch to takeout, a lot to delivery. They're having to turn on a dime and do this, and it's hard to make changes in a business over a long period of time, but I think it can be really challenging to do it in a short period of time. I do think you're going to have some of these businesses that are not going to make it.
I'm wondering about the coffee houses because Starbucks, I believe, is closing some of their they're staying open. You can come get a cup of coffee, but you have to leave. They're staying open for that, but they're not letting you stay in the store. Do you because you see a lot of people in these coffee shops, and they are not drinking coffee. They're just working on their laptops. Are they going to suffer a hit? Are they going to discover, we're a big open, we're like the public library here.
Well,
which, by the way, is also closed.
Right. So, I mean, there's been this movement, of course, toward making it sort of the third place, right? Where it's
right,
not just, you
right.
don't just come in and get a commodity cup of coffee. You hang
right.
out and it's an environment. Certainly, yes, if you walk into a Starbucks, you'll see a lot of people hanging out there for hours and hours. And I think, they've tried to restrict some of that. I mean, this is a big portion of the economy. I had a piece in the Charlotte Ledger this morning just looking at it. In the Charlotte region, you have about 147,000 people that work in leisure and hospitality. That's going to be the industry, I think, that's affected the most, at least initially. That's about 12% or so of the employment in this region. So that's a big piece. And not all those jobs are going away. They'll be replaced by there's some other industries that might be hiring. But it is a big chunk, and so they're just trying to figure out some survival strategies at this point, coming up with some creative solutions. You see some of them banding together, asking for donations, saying, hey, there are all these kids out of school. They need to be fed. Why don't you give us some money? We can provide meals, lunch meals, to children, and that sort of thing. So they're looking for creative solutions.
Yeah, but how about putting some money in the tip jar for our waiters and waitresses who are not here and not working, but we're going to give it to them anyway? How about that?
All kinds of solutions. I'm sure they would welcome that.
All right, let me share with you some things that have come in from listeners while we've been talking here. The Larry emails, one of your guests made it sound like there were no warning signs of recession before coronavirus. Didn't we have economic warnings about the level of corporate junk bond debt? I've read a bunch of articles that presage the danger of over-leveraged debt. That sounds like it's a question for you, Mark Vidner.
Well, that is one area that was a problem area prior to this crisis, and it's one that could be made worse. Although a lot of that, the corporate debt that's at risk, a lot of the high yield debt that's at risk is in the energy sector. And the move by the Saudis was in part related to the COVID-19 outbreak, because that's weakened global demand. It weakened the price of oil, and the Russians weren't going to cut back production as much as the Saudis wanted them to. So they said, well, we'll just flood the market with oil. So that's created some issues there. But I don't think that corporate debt was such a threat that it would have dragged down the economy. I think it would have been a problem within the energy sector and maybe a few other highly leveraged companies, but I don't think that it would have been a broad-based problem and one that would have brought down the economy.
And while we've been talking, CNBC is reporting that the Dow Jones has jumped more than 500 points at the open after suffering its third worst day ever. Why do we see these gyrations in the market? We have terrible panic yesterday, and today, let's buy back some shares.
Well, having those press conferences at 3:30 is not a very good time to have them. They should probably
just
do them after.
They should do it at 4:30.
Well, you should do it at 4:30, because at 3:30, that's when the limits are taken off of the stock market, so we can go up or down as much as it can. And it's also when mutual funds are coming in and buying or selling.
So why have they been doing that?
I'm not sure. I don't work for them.
All right.
Well, is it jumping because the Tom Brady news? Is that what's driving
it? Tom Brady's leaving the Patriots? Yeah. Shelley emails, what advice is there for small business owners while their businesses are either shut down or have such little business that they can't pay the rent, the utilities, etc.? My family owns a business and is not only worried about whether to stay open, but how to stay afloat. Our customers are vanishing out of panic. This could cripple the business to the point where we might not be able to reopen, depending on how long this all persists. Tony.
Yeah, I think one of the interesting questions is, how much leeway are banks and landlords, are they going to give these people that can't make these rent payments? If it's a month or two, I think they're going to be very accommodating. If it's longer than that, I'm not sure. Maybe Mark has some thoughts on that.
Yeah, the Federal Reserve is given some guidance to the banks that basically saying, they haven't all figured it out, but I would imagine that there'll be an effort to, if folks can't make mortgage payments, to roll it into the mortgage and extend it, re-amortize the mortgage.
But if you're in one of those businesses where you're paying off your vendors through cash flow, and the cash flow suddenly stops and you owe the vendor a gazillion dollars, are they going to be understanding? Can they afford to be understanding? Will the banks give you a loan to tide you over?
Yeah, it gets very difficult there. And I think that that's where we're looking at some sort of a fiscal stimulus. And I think this $850 billion fiscal plan hopefully is going to address some of that. Although I can tell you that what the Fed's done, what the House and Senate have done, what the president's proposing, we're still in the early innings, maybe even in the first inning of this crisis. So there's going to be a lot more stimulus, a lot more programs to come.
But are they running? I mean, the Fed, it lowered the rate to almost zero. Are they running out of arrows in their quiver? I mean, that's been some concern. Do you think that's an issue?
They also announced a $700 billion asset purchase, which is Treasury securities and mortgage-backed securities, to try to bring some order back to the market. But one of the things that it kind of went unnoticed was they said at least $500 billion of Treasuries, at least $200 billion of mortgage backs, and they didn't consider this to be QE. So they're going to do as much as they can to bring order back to the market, and they're prepared to do a whole lot more, maybe 10 times more.
So I have about a minute left in this segment, and Celia on Twitter, Michelle, says, if you have money going automatically into an index fund monthly, not 401k or other tax-deferred option, should those funds be diverted to a money market for now?
I think that if you have a good financial plan, that you stick with it, because right now stocks are on sale, equities are on sale, so you get more shares for your money. That would be the time to do this. I mean, we instinctively want to sell when things are going down, but you want to buy low and sell high. So I've got money going into a retirement account, 529 plan, and an after-tax index fund, and I've kept everything the same. And I'm just going to keep doing that because I do believe you always have to say historically, the markets do come back. And now just stick to your plan. Don't change your plan unless something fundamentally changes and you need that money to buy food, pay your rent. Then you might want to pull back and just use that cash for your everyday living expenses. And back to that question about businesses, it's the same thing as with consumers. Stay in constant contact with your lenders, your vendors, whomever you owe money to, because they all know what's happening. It's not.
Hold on, let me stop you there because I got to take a break. We'll come back and follow up on that in just a moment in Charlotte Talks. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the impact of the coronavirus outbreak on the economy and on your personal financial situations. Tony Mesilla is here. He's the editor of the Charlotte Ledger. Mark Vitner is a senior economist with Wells Fargo. And Michelle Singletary is a personal finance columnist for the Washington Post. And you were underlining, Michelle, something that Tony alluded to. I think it was Tony, or maybe it was Mark, about businesses who are depending on vendors for help in this. If they're undergoing problems, don't disappear. Don't ghostlight your vendors. Get in touch with them, correct?
That's right. Just talk to the people you owe money to. Talk to your mortgage owners, your landlord. Just stay in constant contact. Everybody knows what's going on. And if you had a fundamentally good business, you were paying your bills on time, and you were a good customer, they're going to work with you. And even if you had challenges before this, everyone understands what's going on. And I talk to consumers all the time who run into financial problems. And you know the one thing they don't do? They don't contact the lender. They're afraid because they say, well, I don't have the money. What do I need to call them for? Well, let them know what's going on. Let them know the measures that you're taking, that maybe you are doing takeout to try to bring some money in. Just keep them informed. It is the absence of information that ends up being the death knell for a lot of people when they come into financial trouble.
Rick Sandler, who is the CEO of something called Eminence Capital, told CNBC that, quote, this entire market would turn around in 1 second if the government came out and said we're going to provide business interruption insurance to companies that lose money in the second quarter if they don't fire any workers. Do you think he's right, Michelle?
Well, that's above my pay grade.
All right. Do you think he's right, Mark?
I don't think there's any one solution that we have that's going to turn this thing around. I mean, it is, the markets reflect, the stock market reflects the present value of risk-adjusted future cash flows. And
well, market aside, what about the economy? The market and the economy are two different things, as you know.
But the market and the economy both work with that same, in that same way, in that every business decision you make is involves a risk calculation, and you're sitting there thinking, you know, what is the present value of this decision? Is it going to be profitable or not, or is it going to mitigate risk?
You were saying a minute ago that we might be in stage one of a multi-stage injection of help from the government, of capital into the economy by the government, this stimulus package that they're talking about now. When President Obama was the president, and he saved the auto industry by going in and rescuing them, and the banking industry by rescuing them, and doing all this stuff with the Fed, got a lot of criticism from people. I don't hear that criticism today. Why?
I don't know. You know, I think that the banks and the auto industry, I think, are still that the perception of bailouts there is still, you know, incredibly misunderstood. And I think within the financial sector, people were wondering, well, why didn't they save Lehman? They saved AIG, and so it looked like the response was sporadic. In the case of the auto industry, I think they made a mistake. I think that they actually did make a mistake in that they tried to save as much of GM as they could. They should have saved as little as they needed to, because right now I think GM's in kind of precarious situation.
Well, I want to look back. I want to look forward, and it seems to me that this time we're talking about saving business, small business, not banks, and because the banks are, I think, in decent shape, and we're talking about helping individual Americans who are going to suffer through this crisis.
I think you're also talking about, you are talking about some bailouts for big businesses. There's a big talk on airlines. The airline industry says it needs $50 billion at least. You know, and so, and there is some, I think you are seeing some pushback on that. I was reading something, you know, that Capitol Hill is saying, well, I don't know. I don't know if we want to be giving money to these big, you know, fat cat airline executives, that sort of thing. So I think there is some pushback on some of those. I do think the government is somewhat limited. I mean, in all these crises that we've had before, the government has never been able to step in and solve it. They've been able to, you know, mitigate some of the effects. But, I mean, even after the financial crisis with the bailouts, it was still pretty bad. I mean, the unemployment here locally was, what, 12 or 13%? I mean, so there's no silver bullet.
Yeah, also, and I'm going to tell you that in terms of the bailouts, I mean, I caught myself doing it just then. I'm thinking in hindsight, and when you're in the arena and you're in real time, you've got to make these decisions with imperfect information. And so I was very, very reluctant to criticize any of the decisions in real time. I think that in hindsight, you look back at things and you think, you maybe should have done it different. But it's very tough to do this when you have very little information and you're having to make decisions very quickly.
Are there opportunities?
Can I also just make a point that this crisis is also showing how flawed our system is in terms of helping the most vulnerable. We talk about, everybody can work at home. Why wasn't that something that we were passionate about before? So all of these things would have been in place for something like this. We're talking about workers with not enough paid sick leave. And then just the health care. I mean, just think about what happened when Trump said, everybody's going to not have to pay for, corona-like illnesses, and the health industry was like, no, we mean just testing. I mean, but that shows that we have issues that were underlying that makes this thing even worse. And let's not forget, those businesses hire workers who often don't make enough to live on. And in some senses, hopefully this crisis will expose that, and we won't just take care of it for right now, that we will have long-term solutions to help people live a good life and be able to even put money in a 401k.
Plus, your bus driver can't work at home. The janitor can't work at home. The mailman or mail person can't work at home. They got to go out there and work. Are there opportunities? Is this tragedy, which is what it is, presenting opportunities for business that maybe business haven't? They're not looking at it like this, because in France, on Sunday, the French luxury group, LVMH, they are the company behind Christian Dior, Guerlain, Givenchy, and Louis Vuitton. They're going to stop making scents and makeup, and instead, they're going to make hand sanitizer at three of their factories, and they're going to give it away. Now, in World War II, American car manufacturers stopped making cars. They made Jeeps. They made airplanes. They made ammunition. They made tanks. Should American businesses be thinking about this? There are ways to make money.
I think they are thinking about it. I think you're seeing maybe some manufacturers looking at you know, can we shift our production line? Can we make ventilators? What are those needs going to be? I think some of them are starting to kind of look at that. You know, we don't know exactly what those needs are going to be, but you know, it's certainly sort of an all hands on deck kind of an issue.
And I think that there's going to have to be a real hard look taken at our dependency on China for 80% of the active ingredients in pharmaceuticals.
Right.
And we used to make a lot of that stuff in Puerto Rico, and maybe that's a better place for it, or maybe here in the United States would be a better place to make it.
This virus affects your respiratory system, and evidently we are woefully short of the number of ventilators that we think we need. Why can't some of these manufacturing facilities that manufacture, I don't know, start making these ventilators?
Well, I think that was one of the things when you were referencing the president's discussion with the governors. They were talking about ventilators.
Did that off the air.
Yeah.
Off the air, I said. Yesterday, the president suggested that the governors, if they could find ventilators, do it, because you could do it faster than we can. And essentially, it's been characterized as saying, you're on your own.
Yeah, I think that's what they were referring to. And I didn't catch the press conference yesterday, but I caught bits and pieces of it watching through the news. But I think one of the things that they're talking about is repurposing ventilators that were used for industrial uses, which would not be approved for medical uses, but would be safe, and getting those. And I think that's what they were referring to in that discussion. And I don't know about their you're on your own. I don't know about that part, but I did.
We've done a lot of diversifying of our local economy since the Great Recession, because we were the number two banking town in the country before the Great Recession, and we suffered mightily in that downfall. You told Tony, Mark, in the Charlotte Ledger that, quote, you continue to believe that Charlotte would weather a recession reasonably well, with the travel, transportation, restaurant, and hospitality industry hit the hardest. So, my question to you is: banking saving us this time?
Well, banking is poised to hold up reasonably well, in that the industry is very well capitalized, and our financial industry is more diverse than it was previously. You know, I think that in terms of our long-term competitiveness, Charlotte's still going to be a place that businesses want to move to, but in the near term, there aren't going to be a whole lot of businesses wanting to move.
And this is the second one. This is almost like climate change, because we're seeing all these once in 100-year storms happening every other week. In our lifetimes, for many people, this is the second major economic storm to hit them. Our parents didn't go through this. They may have come out of they may have been kids during the Great Depression, but they went through some recessions, but they didn't go through these downturn of 2008 and now this.
Yeah, and if you went through 9/11, you said three.
So the 1970s weren't that great. You had gas lines all over the place. I mean,
is this time to take a look at how we do things in this country?
I do think that you bring up a good point, and it comes back to wage insurance. We have these natural disasters, and hourly workers get hit hard, just like they're going to be hit hard in this circumstance. They may not lose their jobs, but if they don't get any hours because their stores are closed, they don't have any income. Unemployment insurance really only kicks in when you lose your job. And so we probably need to reform that system. And I do think that that's something that's going to come out of this crisis, is that we're going to really take a hard look at wage insurance, so that folks that have their hours severely reduced due to natural disasters or calamities like this.
If he hadn't already dropped out and the primaries were a little bit earlier in the process, Andrew Yang is looking pretty good right now.
Looking pretty good. Didn't he just suspend his campaign? Maybe he'll come back. I don't know.
Michelle, for everyday Americans, I know we've talked a lot about this, but I want to underline, I think a lot of people are really personally worried about their situation. So for everyday Americans, those with 401ks or other investments, or people who are planning on retiring and they're using that money for that, or their college funds for their kids, what should they be doing right now? Or is it too late to do anything given how far the markets have fallen?
Well, I think for a lot of people, it is late to make major changes. I mean, if you've got a disruption in your income, you're not going to have a lot of money to fill that emergency fund. But I think Mark was talking about earlier at the top of the show about risk management. And I think that's the key with your personal finances. Mike, you talked about, even when we were, you know, gearing up for the show about your choice of where you went to college. Right now, hopefully after all this abates, people are going to be deciding where to send their kids. So do you send your kids to a more affordable school statewide, or have them go to community college and then commute, or do you send them to that university that costs $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 a year? And now you are looking at, how am I going to pay that bill because I've lost my job? So I think going forward, you need to make better decisions looking down the road, that something could, like, not maybe like this happened, but another major recession.
But you're talking about being more cautious, and if everybody's more cautious, what does that do to the economy?
Well, cautious. I mean prudent, financially right. prudent. Live within your means. Your kid can still go to college. They don't need to go to that brand name college. All of us on this program, I don't know where you all went to school, but I know you went to Maryland. I went to a state school, and I work for the Washington Post. I'm talking about looking at what is best for your finances, what you can afford, and not be reaching past that. So that it's not going to damage the economy if your kid goes in-state. If you keep your car for a little bit longer so that you don't have to take so much debt when you buy the next car. You can buy it with cash. I buy my cars with cash. I'm still buying cars. I'm not just using debt with it. That's what I'm talking about. Look at the risk of what the worst case scenario. You want to plan for the worst and hope for the best. And that's pessimistic.
I'll just make the point that in the last downturn in 2008, 2009, we did see some positive things coming out of that. You know, before that, you had people that were loading up on credit, a lot of credit card, over mortgaged, that kind of thing. And coming out of that, you saw people moving a lot more toward debit cards. You saw people, you know, paying with cash that they actually had. And so there are positives that can come out of this. And so it's maybe hard to see right now, but those things can be positive.
Is that still the case? Are people paying more? Are they less dependent on credit? And are they paying their credit card bills off?
Well, households in general, the saving rate was 8%, which was the highest that we had in the cycle. And debt to income and the amount of income that was needed to service debt was the lowest it's been in 40 years. Now, a lot of that is because the baby boomers have been able to refinance their mortgages.
Yeah.
Younger, the millennials, they're still carrying a little debt, but it's not as problematic as it was pre-recession.
So I have 2 minutes left, Michelle, and you can't see a clock, so I'm going to just keep that in the back of your head. Let's do this demographically very quickly. If you're 20 to 40, what should you be doing right now if you're invested in the market? Buying?
I would say do dollar cost averaging. Pick an amount that you can invest every month and stick with that, and that's going to serve you well long term.
And if you're 40 to, say, 60?
Still the same thing. Because if you're 60, and studies show that you're going to probably live another 20, 30 years.
Okay.
So you still do the same.
If you're in retirement right now and you're living off those investments that are being impacted every single day, what should you do?
Well, hopefully you had a very balanced portfolio, that you had enough in safer investments like bonds and cash that you can pull from that rather than your equity.
So a lot of people aren't invested at all. A lot of people live paycheck to paycheck. You report only 31% of households making less than $23,000 annually, and only 45% making more than $41,000, making less than $41,000, have a savings account, no rainy day fund. What are they facing? And I have 30 seconds.
Well, it's a tough time for them, and I would just say just do the best that you can to make do with what you have. Cut where you can. Consolidate where you can. Maybe you live with your relatives. You take in a roommate. That's unfortunately, people don't want to do that. They don't want to take those kind of steps, but that's what you have to do to make do.
How long will it take for this economy to rebound once this is all over, Mark, do you think?
It typically takes twice as long as the downturn. So if we're down 7 months, it would be a 14-month recovery after that. So that takes us to the end of 2021.
Yikes. And just a month ago, you were here, and things were rosy. Mark Vittner, senior economist at Wells Fargo, Michelle Singletary, personal finance columnist for The Washington Post, and Tony Mesilla, editor at The Charlotte Ledger. Thank you all for the hour. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that share Mazda's passion that cars make driving matter. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.